Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with How Stuff Works and iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And you know what time it is? It's showtime, showtime. Also, time for a classic episode of Tech Stuff. And this episode, originally published on May 21st, 2012, Chris and I phoned it in. We walked into this podcast room, we just sat down, and we went on autopilot. But that's okay, because the episode was Tech Stuff Goes on Autopilot. So get ready to learn all about autopilot. Take it away, past Jonathan and Chris. So today we wanted to talk a little bit about, something that Chris and I do all the time, which is to go on autopilot, like we do in this podcast.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
Every darn week. we wanted to talk about the autopilot systems in airplanes because, you know, you often hear that phrase about switching on autopilot, but what does that actually mean? What does that entail? How did we come up with this idea, you know, because it kind of has a sort of almost magical air about it for anyone who is uninformed about the way autopilot works, right? Like there's a big red button that says autopilot, you press it and presto, everything's cool.
You said air.
Yes. There's going to be a lot of that. Let's get that out of the way right now.
Yep. And I'm a fan of Patrick Smith on Salon. He has a column called Ask the Pilot, because he's a pilot, and people ask him questions about things like what happens if one of the engines falls off a jet, and it, you know, that kind of thing. And
they answer bad things.
Yes, but, you know, not as bad as if all the engines fall off the jet.
Right, no, but I'm thinking about, it depends on if you are under the jet at the time.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, and one of the things that he says a lot of people... He's mentioned this several times. People seem to think that the pilot can get in the cockpit, close the door, push the red button, and the plane will fly itself to the next destination, and he gets out and thank you for flying with us.
Then he collects the big fat check for pushing a button.
Yeah, it doesn't really work that way.
No.
It can do a lot, but yeah. It can't do that.
It can even land a plane depending on the conditions and the systems aboard. But let's take it back a step first. Let's talk about sort of the development of autopilot. So way back in 1908, there was a fellow by the name of Elmer Sperry, and he was developing something called a gyro compass. And it was using a gyro compass and other sorts of gyroscopes that in combination could work with the systems on a plane to allow an automated steering. And essentially what it did was it just kept the steering steady. It's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, this idea of just you're on a steady heading and it keeps you on that. The first test flight of a plane with this sort of autopilot system was performed by Lawrence Burst Sperry, son of Elmer Sperry, which was, again, right around 1908. And it used four gyroscopes to help stabilize the plane. So the gyroscopes, depending on their attitude, and I don't mean whether they were friendly or not.
Yeah, forget you. You can fly the darn plane yourself.
I mean their position relative to the rest of the environment would dictate how the system would work. And so that was they developed the first true autopilot system, which was later used by a fellow named Wiley Post, which is just a great name.
Yeah, you know, his name is one of those names that you hear every once in a while.
Yeah.
He was famous back in his time, which was the earliest part of the 20th century.
No, 1930s.
Yeah, yeah. Famous aviator. And his name sort of just comes up every once in a while. I know that name. Why is he famous? Well, as it turns out, he flew cross-country.
Yeah.
And made headlines with that, certainly.
And then he flew around the world. And the first time he flew around the world with a navigator. It took a long time for him to get all the way around the world. But the navigator was there to not just navigate, but also make sure that Wiley remained Wiley.
Yes.
And that he was alert.
Nice.
And thank you. Alert and capable of maneuvering the plane and not just, you know, anytime anyone has to do a monotonous task for a really long time, there is a danger that we will go on autopilot, as in we'll stop paying attention and then disaster can strike. So, he had a navigator. Well, then he decided that he wanted to try and do a solo flight around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 1933. And so in order to do a solo flight and still be able to rest and, you know, because these flights were taking hours and hours and hours at a time just, from one spot to the next before refueling. And, it's a long time to stay awake. So he would had this system developed by the Sperrys that would help keep the plane on course so that he could rest.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, he would probably have gone crazy. You know, you go without sleep long enough and you start to go bonkers. So, that was a very important development, and it's today autopilot is part of something a little more sophisticated. Back then, it was a fairly simple system,
mm-hmm.
but now it's part of the automatic flight control system,
mm-hmm.
which in turn is one component of an airplane's avionics system.
Yeah.
And before we go too far into this, I do want to say we have an article on HowStuffWorks.com about how autopilot works,
mm-hmm.
and it's an excellent article. I do recommend you go check that out if you want more information. We're going to give you the rundown on it, but it'll help a lot if you want to look further into it. There's a great article on our site.
Yep, it's by William Harris, as a matter of fact, who used to be one of my writers as well. So.
Yeah, so an avionics system, in case you're wondering what that is, you know, we just mentioned that the automatic flight control system is part of avionics. Avionics refers to electronic systems aboard a plane that are really designed to help control the plane and the key elements of flight.
Mm-hmm.
And the other systems that are involved include things like navigation, collision avoidance, communication, and weather systems. So these are the very important systems that allow pilots to do their job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get as much information and have as much control over the aircraft as possible. And so, the original purpose of the autopilot was to help pilots be able to take little rest breaks, especially when doing something that's truly tedious, like cruising at high altitude.
Mm-hmm.
When you've reached your cruising altitude, like 30,000 feet, and that's it. You're stuck there for however long the flight is going to be before you have to start taking her down, and that can get, you know, if you got several flights a day, that can get pretty tiresome.
Yeah.
So the autopilot helps the pilot kind of offload that so that the pilot is in the best shape to bring the plane in for landing or deal with any other, you know, unusual circumstances or even things like turbulence.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's a smooth flight, it shouldn't be much trouble for the autopilot to keep the plane going where it's going.
Right.
And it does that through a series of, well, course corrections, really.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it's basically, the idea behind the autopilot itself is pretty simple. You have several control surfaces, and we talked about this in the past. You have control surfaces on the wings,
yep.
and on the vertical stabilizer, known to those of us in the just talking about planes sort of world, the tail.
Yeah.
It basically controls, it can sense what's going on. It says, oh, well, we're descending a little bit. We need to adjust the control surfaces to change the airflow and get the plane back up, you know, these 10 feet that we've dropped.
Right.
So it does is basically, and I'm grossly oversimplifying it, but, on purpose.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically all it's doing is saying, oh, We need to fix this. We need to adjust this and get it back to where we were. And then it just makes these very subtle course corrections to keep the plane more or less where it is when the pilot hits the big red button.
Right.
I don't even know if the big red button exists.
No.
But it's slang for what we're talking about here.
Right. So to get a little more in depth with this, you have a closed system.
Yes.
Right? And that closed system includes sensors that are on these control surfaces, as well as other sensors that are part of the plane's systems that provide information to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the computer takes this information, compares it to whatever command the pilot has given. For
mm-hmm.
example, the pilot might say, I want to maintain this altitude, this speed, and this course.
Right.
And then what happens is the computer takes the information gathered by the sensors, compares it to the command given by the pilot, and then makes any adjustments necessary in order to maintain that command. Mm-hmm. Now, that might mean sending information to a servo that will adjust one of those control surfaces, mm-hmm, to make a bit of a change, either to turn the plane a little bit or raise or go up in altitude or lower in altitude, whatever is necessary in order to maintain the command that was set by the pilot. So those three basic control surfaces that Chris was alluding to include elevators, mm-hmm, which that's on the tail of the plane, and that helps control the plane's pitch. So if you imagine a plane that, let's say that you're balancing a plane along its length, mm-hmm, so it's, you know, it can tilt forward or backward. The pitch is, that's what the pitch does. It allows the plane to either go up or down angled, mm-hmm, in that way. Then you have the rudder, which controls the yaw.
I love that word.
That's what twists the plane. And then you have the ailerons, which are on the rear edge of the wings. That's what rolls the plane to one side or the other. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are your three basic control surfaces that can do these changes to the plane's attitude in, mm-hmm, flight.
Right.
And depending upon the autopilot system you have, you may be able to have one or two or all three of those under automatic control.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's pretty easy to understand. A one axis control system will control just one of those three surfaces, and it's usually the ailerons.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just going to be one, it's usually that. Two axis controls usually controls the elevators and the ailerons, and then three axis controls all three, clearly. You wouldn't, you know, don't have like a fourth one pop in and then,
hey, what's this do?
Forget you, rudder. You never get controlled. No, that's not the case. So depending on that system, the autopilot is in charge of making sure that any adjustments get sent out to those different control surfaces to maintain the command that the pilot has made.
Mm-hmm.
And the sensors include other things like gyroscopes, which help determine the actual attitude of the plane, how it's, you know, whether it's tilted in one side or the other, or the pitch is wrong. That's what the gyroscopes can help with. And then you have accelerometers, so obviously determining what the speed is of the plane, whether it's undergoing any sort of acceleration or deceleration. Altimeters, which tell you how high up the plane is.
That seems relatively important.
And then a compass, which tells you which way you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the more, but over the last several years, the autopilot system is also dependent upon GPS receivers,
mm-hmm,
which can let the autopilot system know where the plane is geographically and thus make any sort of course corrections in order to even plot a course to a destination.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more that can be offloaded onto a computer system. Now, we're still not to the point where we're going to have robot pilots. You know, these autopilot systems are meant to help help pilots rest and plan for other parts of the flight, but they're not replacements.
Yeah. So make sure if you're a pilot that you watch what you eat before you
right,
you know, take over the controls.
Oh, yes, I had the lasagna. This is Bob. I'm mixing those up because it's Airplane and Airplane 2.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can tell, you know, from the very first when Wiley Post was using the early Sperry system, which was based solely on gyroscopes and compass readings, you know, that was a very simple version of what would later become these systems. And now that we have all these different different types of sensors and different types of input, the autopilot system can be a lot more accurate than those of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it has become a very, very useful tool for an aircraft pilot to rely on.
Yeah, and also I should point out that these systems with the servo mechanisms and everything that help control the surfaces, they are independent of the manual systems that are used by the pilot when the pilot controls the plane. Whenever he or she is controlling the plane, it's an independent series of servos and other elements that keep these surfaces moving. And the reason for that is because autopilot systems, like any other system can fail.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of failure, you want to have the option for manual control so that the pilot can take over and everything will be fine.
Right.
And so in order to do that, you have to make sure there's some redundant systems there, because if it's a servo mechanism failure, which is frequently the case mm-hmm. in an autopilot failure, then you want to make sure you still have a way of controlling that surface area, or else you're really stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got some serious problems if a system like that fails.
Over Macho Grande?
I'll never be over Macho Grande.
We've got more to say about autopilot in just a moment, but first let's take a break to thank our sponsor.
The other thing that's important to remember is that if an autopilot system is engaged, meaning that it's working, not that it has found the right person and they're going to build a family together.
It has the right avionics system. Settle down and have little avionics
systems.
We're
being a little extra goofy this morning for reasons I can't understand. Other than the fact that we were not able to come in our normal studio time because Stuff to Blow Your Mind was taking up the space in front of us. So blame them. Anyway, yes, when the autopilot system is active, you want to be able to turn that off before you engage manual systems mm-hmm. because otherwise what's happening is you're fighting the autopilot. Because the changes you make, what's going to happen is the sensors in the autopilot system pick up the fact that you've changed or that conditions have changed. So let's say that you're trying to bring the plane down to a different altitude. And you start to do this and autopilot is already engaged. The sensors on the autopilot start to say, wait a minute, now we're going lower. And he told me.
Yeah.
He told me at the beginning of this flight that we wanted to maintain 34,000 feet. So gosh darn it, I'm going to change the altitude of this here plane. So disengaging the autopilot is very important before taking over manually. Now, I'm sure there are many systems out there that have sort of an automatic disengaging process so that if a pilot were to take the controls, the autopilot would turn off so that you wouldn't have a pilot and autopilot fight over where a plane is going.
Yeah.
But there have been in the past a few accidents and incidents that were linked in one way or another to autopilot failures. A lot of experts that I have looked at, the writings rather, not the actual experts. I mean, I look at them too, but they get a little self-conscious after a while. But according to their research, it seems to me like autopilot failure is not generally a cause for accidents. It tends to be something else that's happened. There have been a few cases where autopilot was disengaged and then perhaps turned back on again at a time when a plane was experiencing trouble, and that didn't help matters. But it doesn't look like autopilot failures often result in catastrophe. Mainly because we have these well-trained pilots that are in the cockpits that can take over when that happens.
That's true. I think it's time to bring up some negative feedback.
Ah, the negative feedback loop.
Yeah, no, a feedback loop is basically and this doesn't necessarily have to be an electronic thing.
No.
I was reading an article in Wired about this. If you've ever seen those speed indicator things on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That say, hey, speed limit's 35 and you're doing 42, pal, slow it down, and it flashes at you. That's creating a feedback loop. They use that example specifically. So basically, that article was talking about how they're actually fairly effective at getting people to slow down because they're providing you feedback on what you're doing. And that sort of creates this sense of, well, I should probably behave myself and stay close to the speed limit in this area.
Yeah. I don't want to get pulled over some people are thinking, I don't want to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And other people are thinking, I am going too fast for this neighborhood.
Exactly.
I think most of the people I encounter are of the first part, where they look around and think, I don't see any cops.
Yeah.
I just screwed up the levels there too, I'm sure.
Probably.
I'm sorry.
But in this case, the autopilot system uses a negative feedback loop.
Yes.
So let's say you're flying at 34,000 feet.
Okay.
And, I would imagine when I used 10 feet before, I'm thinking that's probably a fairly subtle change for a plane in flight. So
I would imagine.
Let's say it goes down 10 feet, maybe as a result of a little turbulence or something, and it sets off a signal in the processors because the sensors have detected that there is something. So that's negative feedback, and it says, oh, it's something's changed. It's not supposed to be this way. Fix it. And so it's just constantly going through this loop. Is it okay? Yes. All right. Never mind.
Yeah, don't
okay?
do anything.
Yes. Never mind.
Is it okay? We're tilting. All right. Fix that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's if you want to know another negative feedback loop mechanism that you're probably pretty familiar with, we did an entire episode about it, the thermostat.
Ah, yes.
Because let's say you set your thermostat for, we'll say 70 degrees because I like it right around there.
Okay.
In my house. So 70 degrees. So when the temperature's at 70, everything's copacetic. Nothing gets turned on. As soon as it starts hitting 71, then you have the system click into place. The air conditioning, the air conditioning system itself starts to fire up, which ironically makes it cooler. And, then it starts blowing cool air through the house. And once the air has become cool enough around the thermostat and the internal thermometer detects it, then it switches back off again, and that's a negative feedback loop system.
I'm just glad you've upgraded from that swamp cooler.
I'm just glad I upgraded from opening up all the windows and shouting at people.
Yeah, your neighbors are happy with that, too.
They are. I yell, get off my lawn, but I live in an apartment, so it's a little awkward. Three times then.
Arr. Okay, so negative feedback loops use a receptor, a control center, and an effector.
Yes.
Basically, the receptor is what's figuring out what's going on. It sends information to the control center, and then the effector is the thing that makes the change.
So, yeah, in the system of the autopilot, we're talking about the sensors are the receptor.
Yep,
the,
and there are many different kinds in this case.
Yes, the control center is the computer that takes in all this information, and the effector are the servo mechanisms that the computer sends commands to that then make adjustments to those control surfaces so that the plane does whatever it was the pilot wanted it to do. Mm-hmm. And, and these systems are incredibly sophisticated now to the point where, like I mentioned before, they can actually land a plane and sometimes are used to land a plane. Not generally speaking. Most of the time it's a human pilot that's landing a plane.
Yeah.
But in cases where visibility is really limited, there are times where they will incorporate an autopilot system in order to bring the plane in and land it when there's a fear that maybe human failure could play a role in a safe landing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not common, but it can happen.
Yeah, they prefer not to do that.
Yeah.
It's usually better to that's not a time when you want the system to fail.
It's usually a pretty dramatic turn of events for that to happen because normally pilots don't bring planes into to an airport where there's already that kind of limited visibility if they can help it. They'll usually divert to another, really air traffic control will tell them to divert to another airport that they can get to safely rather than go into an airport where there's going to be conditions that will severely limit visibility. Now, that's not always possible. I mean, in commercial flights, that tends to happen quite a bit because, the passenger safety is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But with something like a military flight, it may not be a possibility. So different cases depending on the whole scenario there. But it is possible and it has happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know we haven't really diverted from our pathway, but that's what a good autopilot does. Remains nice, steady, and true. And for that, we're going to continue on our journey and make a little stop to thank our sponsor.
Now, I don't know. Did you want to talk about other types of autopilot at all?
What? You mean like cruise control?
Well, I was talking specifically about cars because that's been coming up a lot lately.
So things
people
like
have been talking about how in 3 years, cars will be driving themselves.
Well, they're already doing that if you work for Google.
Yes, they're also rear-ending people.
People are backing up into them. You know it. They say, like, there's no one in that car. Reverse, boom. Google owes me money. That's all. That's allegedly.
Yeah, I got
I use the word allegedly. It's all right, right? That's the way that works.
Send hate mail to Actually, well, of course, Google is testing systems like that. But, you know, then it is a little more difficult in some ways for a car.
Well, yes.
For a plane, you know, it's going that way, and there's probably nothing in front of it directly.
Generally speaking, air traffic is less severe than ground traffic. Yeah. Once you get toward an airport, then yes, air traffic starts to pick up. But by then, usually pilots have disengaged the autopilot system anyway.
But with roads, you have things like weather conditions take into account, slippery roads. You've got twists and turns. You've got squirrels.
Construction. Don't have a whole lot of construction at 34,000 feet.
No, people who are not paying attention while they're driving in front of you.
People who are applying makeup, shaving. Shaving while applying makeup, while reading.
Yeah. So, they're working on systems to do similar kinds of things with cars, but it's a much more challenging, or at least I think so, much more challenging proposition to put that kind of a system in a car because there are so many more factors that an autopilot would have to take into account. Of course, now there are, it's pretty common to find at least the higher end models with sensors that will help you park. They have, you know, those auto parking cars.
Right. The whole collision detection stuff so that it can tell when it's close to another object and thus adjust the controls so that you avoid colliding with it.
Mm-hmm. Which use, some radar and cameras, infrared systems. Mm-hmm. These things, lane changing. I like that system too, where, it's able to detect where the lanes are and kind of keep you in place.
Make sure that, you're not going to smash into someone who's in your blind spot.
Yes.
Which is very important.
Especially if there are a lot of bicyclists around.
These systems are emerging for cars. I was going to say vehicles, but really an airplane is one too. But it's kind of an emerging technology for cars. And one thing that will really help this technology propagate is when we actually see it in lots and lots and lots of different cars, because then you can have a system where the cars are just one element within a system. Now, see, in the plane, we're talking about a closed system that's all contained within the plane itself.
Mm-hmm.
With something like cars and traffic, you're talking about a system that could, in theory, be a meta system, system of systems. Each car would have its own system, including things like sensors for collision detection and lane detection, all that sort of stuff, as well as GPS receivers so that the car knows where it is and is navigating to the appropriate destination.
Right.
And maybe even things like other kinds of radio receivers so that the system has information about traffic reports and construction delays and things like that so it can reroute around those.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a system of systems where you could have an entire infrastructure that can detect where these cars are based upon their own electronic signatures. If you've built in stuff that's directly in the roads or part of the whole infrastructure. And then the system of systems could help maintain a good flow of traffic by helping these individual cars route to the appropriate destination in the most efficient way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So then, the closed system isn't truly closed because it becomes part of a larger system.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty. I mean, it's incredibly complex, and we're not there yet, not by a long shot, because we would need not just lots and lots and lots of cars that have these sensors and these mechanisms incorporated into the design of the car itself. We would have to go and build out the infrastructure in the cities, which is an entirely different prospect. I mean,
that might be slightly expensive,
and it might take more than a decade to complete. I mean, based upon how long certain streets in Atlanta have had metal plates on top of potholes, I'm going to guess that incorporating such a sophisticated system that would need to be really pervasive throughout the entire infrastructure would probably take about 2,000 years.
Well, it would take, depending on the size of the area covered. Like a municipality could probably do it a lot more quickly than a nation covering all of its, major highways and things.
Right.
And then you start talking about surface streets and back roads and things like that. It could take a very, very long time. Plus, there will be people who are loath to give up their older cars that don't have these systems.
Even if there's a new system that has manual versus automatic, I think there are a lot of people who would be who would have reservations about switching to an automated driver system. Either they would feel powerless in that situation, or they just genuinely enjoy driving.
Yeah.
Because I've heard there are such people.
There are such people.
I don't understand them. They come from a different planet than I do.
It's all right.
But
I don't judge. Take it out on you.
I don't judge. You know, they can be crazy. That's fine. Nice. I know lots of crazy people. I work with most of them. Or most of the people I work with are crazy. They weren't that way when I started. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, these autopilot systems are finding their ways into other different vehicles, so cars, boats as well, and other sorts of vehicles. And I expect that we'll continue to see that. I mean, this whole idea of an automated system that helps you get to where you're going, it's just another example of us trying to create technologies that make our lives easier, more convenient, and paving the way for our robot overlords to easily conquer us when they choose to rise up against us.
Awesome.
As in the documentary Terminator.
And that concludes this classic episode of Tech Stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I always find autopilot to be a fascinating subject. It's one of those things where if you trace the development of autopilot, you can kind of look at a continuing line that goes up to autonomous vehicles today. And it's really fascinating to me that this technology is as old as it is. If you guys have suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, please send those to me. You can do so at the email address techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Or you can pop on over to our website. That's techstuffpodcast.com. You'll find links to all the old episodes. You'll find links to our presence on social media. You'll find a link to our online store, and every purchase you make there goes to help the show, so we greatly appreciate it. We're going to get some new designs in there, so check that out, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.